How do you feel about striking up an erotic conversation with the world's most popular AI chatbot? Yes, ChatGPT wants to step out of the friendship zone and take your relationship to the next level. OpenAI says the new version of ChatGPT also includes the ability to act like a friend. It's the latest move in a world that's increasingly using AI for intimacy, romance, and friendship. A new YouGov survey found 1 in 7 Australian adults could imagine falling in love with an AI chatbot. Other respondents said they would sometimes rather stay at home and speak with a chatbot than go out with friends. So what happens if our companions, lovers, and friends are made of code? Is it innovation? Can a bot help alleviate loneliness? Or are there too many risks when you replace human connection with AI? Well, with me is Professor Jeannie Patterson, co-director of the Centre for AI and Digital Ethics at the University of Melbourne. And Scott Waters is CEO and founder of the youth mental health service Life Changer. Jeannie, I might start with you. What's your understanding of these new ChatGPT functions?
Interestingly, ChatGPT, we've heard in the news that a lot of young people are using ChatGPT for companionship. We know that there's lots of commercial products providing companionship. ChatGPT has, or OpenAI has announced they're going to have a special ring-fenced, age-verified option for people to engage in erotic conversations with a chatbot.
That is something you can already do with other chatbots that are around,
right? It certainly is. A number of the inverted commas companion bots will engage in erotic conversations. Replica is probably the most well-known of those. And I think Grok will also engage in erotic conversations. That being said, there's been a lot of move around the world, in Australia, in England, even in the US, to kind of clean up access to harmful conversations with sort of free chatbots or companion bots. And so there's been a bit of a push to clean up the market. So it's perhaps not surprising that if you're going to introduce erotic content, you'd put it behind age verification.
So on one hand, we're cleaning up the market. On the other hand, we're sort of expanding what it's allowed to do. Oh,
yes,
Jeannie, there's so many questions I have about this. I guess, how do you age verify it? What's safe? What's not safe? I mean, from your perspective, what are your key concerns, or do you think it's a good thing?
Look, my key concern is that I'm really interested in the possibility of digital mental health developed by mental health professionals that will help address the fact that we have a high rate of poor mental health, particularly in young people. This has been tracked by a number of our mental health services, and they can't get access to therapists. And it's possible we could use digital technology really to provide some of that early stage support. But instead, we've got the race to the bottom, where we've got more and more chatbots either providing utterly inappropriate content, failing to pick up on not subtle signs of self-harm, but blatant signs of self-harm. And now we're going to encourage young people who may be lonely not to respond to that loneliness, perhaps becoming more engaged in their community, but lose themselves in a virtual world of erotic chatbots. And as for the age verification, well, we know the troubles with that, yeah, with our social media ban.
So, Scott, you're with Life Change, which is a youth mental health service. That's one of the key things that Jeannie's just mentioned there. Your teams are seeing a big spike in people mentioning AI companions during your workshops.
Yeah, morning. Morning, Tegan. Morning, Jeannie. Without doubt. I mean, in the last 2 years in particular, one of the questions we ask in some of our workshops, and this is with about 140,000 young people last year, so it's a large volume of evidence, is we question them around their village, their community, and what that looks like. And we noticed, and obviously that includes parents, that includes mentors, teachers, coaches, etc., that about 2 years ago, what was coming into that conversation was included in that network or that community or that village was AI chatbots. So to have that mentioned as and being described as a relationship was, at first, it was actually quite alarming when we're hearing 13, 14, 15-year-olds discussing that, yeah, chatbots are part of that relationship now. So I think the concerns And the comprehensive framework that's needed to make sure that this is safe, because digital interaction isn't the enemy. It's what that interaction actually is, the content. But particularly when you're dealing with young people, when against the backdrop of, you know, suicide remains the biggest killer of young people in the age of 15 to 24. And there is a risk here that not regulated the right way, AI companions, it shares harmful content, it can distort reality, it can provide advice that is counterproductive and dangerous. You know, it can encourage an ongoing interaction that leads to addiction, overuse and dependency. And at an age, particularly with young people, where they haven't really developed fully their critical thinking, they can be misguided and manipulated. So the most important thing for people, and this is medical fact, is the quality of their social interactions. That's what leads to a long and meaningful life. And I'm yet to be convinced that the regulations and frameworks are going to guarantee that. You know, we're experimenting again with young people with complete disregard for the cost, and that's very concerning.
This is Life Matters on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor speaking with Scott Waters, who's the CEO and founder of Life Changer, a youth mental health service, and Professor Jeannie Patterson, who's the co-director for the Centre for AI and Digital Ethics at the University of Melbourne. Kate in Barrie says, I often copy and paste terse text exchanges with my husband into ChatGPT and ask it to tell me what's really going on for him or why I'm being unreasonable. It's very helpful in taking the temperature down and seeing old arguments in new ways. Kate says, I'm always wary and careful to make sure I don't use it to entrench my point of view. Its sycophantic tendencies are dangerous in my experience. Jeannie, that's a really interesting use where we've got someone using the AI to kind of help with an in-person relationship.
Yeah, it is an interesting use, and I have a PhD colleague, a student who's doing a PhD who used to talk about the possibility of doing much the same thing. You know, sort of a sounding board about what was happening in their personal relationships, and that's fine. That's perfectly fine, and your users identified the sycophantic tendencies of GPT. But I guess my comment would be that a person can become more and more reliant on that sort of interchange, and a GPT has no expertise in this area. And the point I'd add that I think was picked up earlier was that these are models that want to sustain the conversation. So you might start by just sort of playing off conversations and what was happening, and it might be useful or interesting. But if you're someone who is feeling lonely or sad, that might become something you do more and more often. And the tendency of the bot is to prolong the conversation. And what we've learned from people who've done research in this area is that in the short term, engaging with a companion bot or a ChatGPT bot or a generative AI may in fact reduce the symptoms of loneliness. People might feel more connected, more in control of their emotions. But over the longer term, they feel more lonely. Their mental health gets worse because interacting with a sycophantic bot is not the same, to go to the earlier point, as interacting with a person, particularly when it's trying to prolong the conversation, and particularly with some of the companion bots. Very quickly, they're prompting the conversation to go from, how do I think about this conversation, to, would you like to engage in explicitly sexually aggressive interactions with me, the bot?
I've also got a text here from Deb who says, I use ChatGPT to ask some questions I felt uncomfortable to discuss with people. It not only acknowledged my concerns in a non-judgmental way, but explained what's happening. I wouldn't use it as a companion as such, but asking questions people aren't comfortable talking about. The positivity culture we live in makes it hard to talk about death, perhaps. Grieving over loss of sexuality as we age. They're just two examples that Deb says I found useful. She says, I did try to raise these conversations with humans, but they were very, very uncomfortable. I'll definitely use it again. Well, also with me is social media content creator Mia Anastasia, who says she uses ChatGPT a bit like a female friend. Mia, what kind of conversations are you having?
Hi. I kind of just use it for lots of different things. Like, I wouldn't call it a friend, but it can kind of give that blanket effect. Obviously, human relationships are always the priority, and I think that they should be for everyone. But still, like, you kind of have access to this thing that, you know, you can kind of, sometimes you don't want to burden your friends with so much information or a little rant, and sometimes to just get things off your chest, I do think in that way it can be helpful. Obviously, you need to set boundaries and kind of hold your ground with how far you get with it, but I do think it can be very helpful, especially in this day and age and how expensive therapy can be. I do think that it is useful.
Sure. So you're not wanting to burden your real friends, your human friends with your problems, but you can kind of vent?
I always tell my friends everything, but like someone said before, like sometimes like there's things you don't want to talk about with people, and like you kind of have access to something that you can kind of get off your chest, because I don't think bottling things up is also beneficial for your mental health either.
So, Scott, you're working with young people. You've got three sons in their teens and 20s as well. We're hearing from Mia there. It sounds like she's got a pretty good handle on what she needs from the chatbot and what she doesn't need. Are we kind of getting too hand-wringy a bit here?
I think, you know, if you walk into any classroom in Australia, let's take a typical state or private school, 15 years of age, 30 kids in a classroom. Within that classroom, there's young people that are thriving. There is young people that are facing significant challenges. There's a broad cross-section. I think the risk here is our most vulnerable in that classroom are going to be the most vulnerable. So those who are struggling potentially with social cues or emotional regulation, you know, and particularly young boys who haven't really developed, or they're high risk takers at a young age, but also probably have impulse control maturity challenges also. So when they're presented with challenges, retreating and replacing those relationships with a companion relationship in a bot, to me, it is a huge challenge. If it's a balanced, I love the idea of ChatGPT, GPT, or bots being there, putting information in, having a sounding board, getting information back out. But when it starts to replace that physical social relationship, I think we run the risk. Most parents that we talk to now, their biggest challenge is making sure that young people are still engaging with social connections outside of the digital space. So I think if this replaces that, if this takes more time away from the physical relationship, I think that's going to be very challenging. The opportunity here for government is to incentivise tech companies to create age-appropriate spaces for young people, but not run this experiment without high-level compliance, governance, and before we unleash this on the public. That's the question, because there's already many anecdotes and stories, very real, where this has led to tragedy. So I just think it's time to pause and for this to be more regulated before we take more risks.
Jeannie, what guardrails would you like to see?
What I'd like to see is I'm going to say I liked Mia's example of sort of using, and indeed the one before, using a chatbot as a sounding board. It tells us that can be really useful. But the comment I'm going to make is that ChatGPT is a for-profit tool, they haven't made any money out of it yet, which is trained on the content of the internet. So I'm not entirely sure that's the best sounding board in the long term, particularly for the young people Scott's mentioned. I'd actually like to see more thought put into developing tools that are appropriate for young people, that fulfil the role that's perhaps lacking of that sounding board, that place that people can go for anonymous advice. But the tools are developed by specialists, mental health specialists, like Scott, Because I just don't think that a thing that's either trained on the wide internet or has been developed to sustain conversations in order to earn more money for the person yep. that's made it available are the best place for young people to seek advice and support.
Jeannie, Scott and Mia, thank you all so much for joining me. Professor Jeannie Patterson is co-director for the Centre for AI and Digital Ethics at the University of Melbourne. Scott Waters is CEO and founder of the youth mental health service Life Changer. And you also heard from Mia Anastasia, who uses ChatGPT a little bit like a female friend.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.